Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to Tech Can't Save Us, podcast by Literal Humans. We're very excited to have Chris Burnett, Killer KB, the KB Meister, on for the podcast. What's up, Chris?
Calling out my IG handles.
Sorry about that.
It's all good. What's up, Paul?
I'm chilling. So just so listeners know, Chris is our first guest on the podcast. We go way, way back to high school. Back in Norristown, Pennsylvania, the suburbs of Philadelphia. So we're extra grateful to Chris for being the first guest on Tech Can't Save Us. So thank you.
I appreciate you having me.
Well, we'll kick it off. So Chris, as you know, the podcast is all about tech for good. The name of the podcast is a provocative statement that tech can't save us. You are currently working with, let's say, an international sports brand.
Yes.
That in many ways is pushing the, you know, the tech for good, or just like, you know, the tech agenda forward in its own ways. So can you talk about your client and the ways that you see them pushing innovation stuff and yeah, just what's happening over there?
Yeah. So I see, especially with, so the technology that we're able to bring to our consumers are like your traditional website.com and your apps. And it's mostly an e-commerce platform, right? Because we're trying to sell products, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to get as many products in as many people's hands as quickly as possible, which with COVID has been a little bit of a challenge, but not something that, you know, someone like where we are can't handle, especially in the middle of a crisis. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I think some of the technology that has been brought to sort of shape using technology for good has been things like, you know, when the pandemic first came out, there was a switch from, you know, creating face masks, right, that are branded. So it's both a do good, but also commercialized.
Right.
Right. So there's that happening. And, you know, we also have a lot of sort of technology with 3D printing, which was also used in places like China for, again, same thing, beginning of the pandemic. You know, there were some 3D printed, you know, more sturdy facial coverings created in the very beginning of the a pandemic in the APAC region. So there's that technology, right? So the technology that we use to build products, and then there's the technology in the platforms that we sell the products on. And I think when it comes to the platforms where we sell our products, we don't necessarily do enough when it comes to doing good in the world, in my opinion. And it's not a bad thing. It's just almost like what are big brands, like where I'm at, how are big brands meant to tell a story about, you know, what technology means and how to do good with it. And, you know, we have, you know, sports apps where you can train and run with other people, but it's meant for you to use the app for a little bit of time, but then meet up with your community, which, you know, it's not necessarily possible right now. So it's definitely a shift, right? It's a shift in how do we leverage technology to connect people. And now it's how do we leverage technology to connect people in a different way, given the new normal that we're living in.
Can I ask you about that? Like what kind of stories you think your client has been excellent at telling using tech?
Yeah. So I think there's been a lot of those like philanthropy efforts that I was mentioning. So the face masks, things like that. And then there was also this social justice movement that happened globally. You know, a lot of people think it was, you know, US centric, which I think is partly true, but it created a lot of movement in other places like where we are in Europe, and not just for Black Americans, but for people of the diaspora and Afro-Europeans. And so there's this push to also bring, you know, different types of, you know, initiatives targeted to Black and brown communities as well. And so those types of stories we saw showing up across different brands all over the place back in June. And so I think there was this moment and then it kind of fizzled out.
Yeah.
Right. So the question is to big brands, you know, are you truly living the values that you're putting forward and the stories that you're telling on your platforms and on social media? Are you living those values internally within your organization?
Yep.
And are you continuing to do those things that you promised? And how are you showing what you're doing back to your customers?
So, I mean, that's a perfect segue into my next question, which is about, like, I know you have thoughts about DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion in the tech and corporate space. So I mean, just please share, like, what are they? What's on your mind these days?
I mean, the question is, like, what topic within that mm-hmm. bucket mm-hmm. do you want to start with? I mean, you know, a lot of tech spaces are still predominantly white, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. right? And I was just having this conversation earlier today, like, the road with good intention, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. whether it's your D&I program or you're hiring for a new expert in D&I to either come in as a consultant or come mm-hmm. in and be a part of your organization to really bring a transformation, mm-hmm. it can't be a tick the box exercise right. where we all kind of take this training or we all do these workshops and then we finish and then we don't actually change the systems that have set us up to be in the place that we already are in, mm-hmm. right? And that takes real work, digging into what are our HR policies, what are our communication policies, what are our hiring policies, how do we think about filling roles, new roles, how do we think about promotions? Mm-hmm. There's a list of things that go on, and all of those are riddled with bias and yeah. issues that have gotten us to the place where we've come. And so the question that we need to, you know, really consider, big brands, is, okay, how do we make this a long-term effort? How are we living the values internally that we said we're going to go out with to our customers? Mm. But then also, how is leadership showing up to change the system? It's just like when we think about in our community, the systems are set up for some people to thrive and they're set up for others to not have as much opportunity. Mm. And it's the same when you go inside of the office. So unless you're doing that very detailed anti-racism work, mm. then your D&I effort is going to fail because the system is never going to allow for that change to stick around longer than your trainings.
And what about, like, investment too? Like, I feel like a lot of companies, they just, you know, they pile the work on their black and brown employees and they're like, okay, you have your job, we pay you your salary, but we also want you to do this D&I stuff. Like, have you seen any companies out there or maybe your client, like, actually invest in paying folks more for their labor, emotional labor, whatever you want to call it, their you know, interpersonal labor? I mean, is anyone doing it right, or is everyone just kind of getting it wrong?
I mean, there are some brands that I've seen doing mm-hmm. some things. I don't know if they're doing it right. You'd mm-hmm. have to talk to some folks inside of these different brands. But there's Nike, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. Nike, they have all types of employee resource groups. Mm-hmm. Of course, most employee resource groups are set up because people of a common group or a common background want to bring issues to the business that they want to have to see changed or influence policy change. Mm-hmm. And leaders inside of Nike, from my understanding, those leaders of those groups are giving bonuses for being leaders of those groups. Huh. So they don't get a salary increase, but say you got elected to be president of your black employee resource group, you are given a bonus to lead that group and to, you know, create change. Mm-hmm. But there are just other organizations who are also better set up to think about culture all the time. Mm-hmm. Because culture changes, people change, language changes, mm-hmm. systems change. And so as the company is dealing with that, they have people and business units, people across different business units mm-hmm. inside of their organizations, being able to be sensors of that change and being drivers of the change that is coming or is the path that they're moving towards. And I think one really good example of a company doing that right now is, I think, Netflix is doing that really well. Mm-hmm. And there are also a lot of other big media companies that are thinking very, very much about how do they invest in building business teams that are focused on culture. And that is a lot for some big media brands to invest in. And so I think the hope is when you have those people who are embedded into the business, mm-hmm. they can then again be there to create that change and to make sure that the systems that they're shifting stay in place.
Yeah, I thought about that earlier because I think I got an email from like Coursera and they had all these courses from like black professors. And I was like, that's really good marketing. Like, you're hitting me with like an email. You maybe know I'm black. Like, you know, and now I want to like take these courses that I don't even care about, like IT, tech, all this stuff, you know. So, and I know you're a big Peloton stan and you love their marketing, especially, you know, like Black History Month, everything they're doing. Obsessed.
If anyone at Peloton is listening to this, call me.
Recruit me.
Call me.
but like moving back to what you said about like, you know, corporate DEI, D&I efforts, I saw this provocative tweet the other day, which I don't know how I saw because I'm not even on Twitter, but it found its way to me, probably Instagram. And it basically said, the revolution will not be corporate diversity trainings. What is your response? What is your response?
I 100% agree with that statement.
Okay.
Because it's like it's the training or the diversity course or the, you know, whatever workshops you're doing.
Yeah.
It's just the beginning, right? Like there's no end to what you need to know about diversity or culture. Like it's ever evolving, right? So, you know, once you get it's like, think about it as any other business target, right? You have your sales target in your market for this year. It doesn't end once you hit it, right? Like you keep selling, right? Or if you sell and you go past that target, what happens next year? That target gets higher or it gets bigger, right? So it's the same. It should be thought of when we think about diversity and inclusion, it cannot be a moment in time and it cannot be a workshop that we're bringing to all of our employees. It has to be just as critical and just as important as any other business KPI, right? If we want to invest in our people, if we want to bring in good talent, how we do that is create safe conditions for people of diverse backgrounds to thrive. And I don't need to get into the specifics of how diverse teams are more innovative, more creative. You can Google and find HBR articles about it. But in order for you to have that diversity and to keep it, you need to make it a safe space. And that is always going to evolve.
Yeah. I mean, that's a powerful point about like we have all these, you know, KPIs and production schedules for products and for revenue and stuff like that. But when it comes to diversity and inclusion, it's like just spaghetti arms. You know what I mean? Like we don't know what we're doing and we're going to do exactly. A one-off training. Like it's just, I don't understand why that happens. Yeah. That's really interesting. And also it makes me think about home too. Like I feel like I move through the world just like confused sometimes because we grew up in a place where we just grew up with everybody.
Diverse.
Yeah, so diverse.
So diverse.
And I
didn't even know what diversity meant until I feel like I went to college.
Because you
like,
grew up in this.
Exactly. Yeah. It was, you know, it's like a fish out of water. I didn't realize that we had grown up in such a dynamic community.
Right. And I remember when I went to college, I'll never forget, I was standing on the quad with like sort of a new friend of mine, and she took out this checkbook and it said like the blank family trust, like trust fund. And I was like, what's a trust fund? Like the shock for me was a class shock more than more than like a race or, you know, like ethnicity shock. So I don't know. That was the big, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the US versus Europe in kind of the tech and you know, workplace culture, tech for good space. Like, what do you see as the big differences? What have been the adjustments for you as a black expat in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to throw this question back at you because I definitely want to hear your perspective on this too. I think there's a different, and I've tried to explain this before, so come with me on this journey while I trip over my words.
I'm here.
I find being here in Europe, generally, there's this level of safety that I don't get back home.
Yeah.
And one of that just simply is because I don't feel the threat of violence on my body when I leave the house, right? Mm. The police here are different. The interactions with police are different. I'm not saying it's
not
great,
perfect.
Right?
Yeah.
But it's a very different experience. Police and guns are just not a topic here. It's like a last resort. So I think for my personal safety, just navigating Europe, it's very different.
Yeah.
I also feel like because of a lot of the labor laws here in Europe, right? Like you have a contract, you have a job. It's pretty tough to get let go, right? And it's pretty tough to just be fired for no reason whatsoever. Yeah. So again, that's another level of safety that comes with being here. And then of course, all the health and social benefits that you have. I mean, it's not socialized healthcare here in Germany. Like you definitely pay for your health insurance, but it's a very different system than what we're used to. And I think there's tons of TikTok videos on like, what did you learn as an American moving outside of the United States that you were sort of ingrained as you into you as normal? Down that TikTok rabbit hole if you want.
Yeah.
But I think generally I just feel more safe. On the flip side, I have this new level of privilege that I didn't know that I would get, right? Because we're so used to being, to race being such a forefront of our identities back home.
Yeah.
That here I feel like of course I'm black. I'm always going to be black. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter where in the world I go, but I'm American first. Yeah. Right. And that comes with not looking African. Mm-hmm. So because my skin tone is lighter than, you know, a darker skin tone person, I am not perceived as African. I'm perceived as American first. Mm. And that comes with privilege. Whereas my American friends who are darker in skin tone do not have that privilege.
Right.
And so that is something that I've had to learn to navigate. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I've had to understand from a privilege perspective. And just saying I have privilege as something that doesn't necessarily always resonate with me, that's something I definitely have had to sort of navigate as being here, for sure.
Yeah, the colorism is real. I mean, I see it in, you know, a place like the UK where there's a ton of folks who are much darker skin from, you know, West Africa or from the Caribbean or something like that. And just you see it, you know, how they're stratified in society. And, you know, it's heartbreaking in a lot of senses. But there's also that other side of it that you said, too, of like, you know, there, it's also a place where you have worker protections and, you know, to some degree, socialized healthcare, at least here in the UK. My friend Jignasha, who's Indian American, she always says she's trying to get her husband to like move over to Europe and maybe start a family over there. But her famous line is like, I'll take my racism with a side of socialized healthcare. You know, because like,
I mean, that's exactly, it's like, what flavor of racism do you live in?
And then at least give me healthcare.
I mean, it's such a real experience, but it's not a utopia, you know, being a foreigner and not being able to like, you know, speak the language is a thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's no utopia, but there are some systems that are set up for Americans to be able to navigate just as much as other Europeans.
Yeah, it's a funny thing that like you become more American when you leave America in a lot of ways, like, you know, that like, which is wild. And obviously, like, there's a whole history of Black Americans, like, you know, Nina Simone and Baldwin, like, leaving and feeling like, you know, living into their privilege in a way. So so big shoes. Pivoting back to tech a bit more here, it's gonna be a hard turn, but we're gonna try it. What's one problem that you think tech can't solve for us?
I don't think technology can solve like racism, right? Like it's just like there's no brand that can solve it either. It doesn't matter what type of story you tell or what, you know, what your intention is behind that story. It's not about what you say. It's really about what you do, right? And I think technology like Clubhouse, right? And I would say it is bringing those conversations to light. And so if you're not on Clubhouse, I'm sorry you're not part of the Cool Kids Club, but Clubhouse is
easy.
Really
I'm
a place
on Clubhouse.
Where
easy.
Okay.
Whoa.
But yeah, but being on there, being able to just meet different people from all over the world and have similar conversations to what we're having
right now
and just dig into these topics, you know, when we talk about racism and I see, like, you know, there was a couple of moments over the summer where like Nike put out some statements. There were a lot of big brands that put out statements. Adidas put out a statement, and there's nothing, I don't even think consumers expect these, you know, big brands or technologists to be able to solve it. It's like, again, how do you create a platform for the conversation in order for people to make change or to do change in the right way? And so I feel like technologists, right, as well as big brands need to come in and think about how do they show up as allies, right? How do we put dollars in the places that help to combat the types of social issues that we're dealing with in the world right now and the type of inequities. But it really boils down to not the intention. It boils down to what you do, right? Not what you say you're going to do.
What about, like, I was thinking about, you know, obviously, like, we just talked about how we grew up and, like, that exposure and sort of connection to folks that are different to you. So if we assume that maybe that is one of the key elements of making someone less racist or even, you know, moving towards anti-racism, what about, like, VR, AR? Like, do you think there could be, like, a VR, AR application that, like, exposes people continually over time to difference or even, like, I try to think about that as a man, like the experience of like walking as a woman and being catcalled or anything like that. Like, could that give people more empathy or, I don't know, move them towards anti-racism?
Maybe. I mean, it could be an experiment that I'd be willing to try, right? Like, there's my perspective and how I live in the world, and then there's the perspective that I always have to constantly fit into, which is mostly a white male perspective, right? And that, because those are the people who kind of, you know, hold the power in the world, or at least in the spaces where I have to navigate. And so I listen to the Simon Sinek's and the folks who are like making big statements on behalf of, like, I mean, I like Simon Sinek for the simple and pure observation that I get to see things clearly from a white man's perspective in a way that I don't get to see, or at least honest conversation from a white man's perspective. That's the only reason why I listen to his stuff or I read his books, because that's a perspective that I don't necessarily have the internal insight into, and he's speaking to that, right? And so, yeah, like, AR, and anyone can use their phone for an AR experience, and there could be a potential opportunity there. But again, it's like, it's one of those things where it's like that cautionary, like, you know, with good intent behind it, you know, you really got to think about what that experience is for the user that you're potentially trying to bring. And when you try, if you are trying to put someone else into someone else's shoes, is it going to be riddled in stereotype, or is it going to be riddled in education? And so it's just like a delicate balance there. But I think technology could open us up to more empathy, but we're not having those conversations on our technology platforms right now.
Right. Yeah, I think it's maybe years away. But that's like the one application that I'm like somewhat bullish on, in terms of like just giving people because I think the research says, and I have like a spiritual coach that I talk to and everything, and they always tell me about like how your brain can't differentiate the difference between like you imagining something and it actually happening to you. So visualization, manifesting, whatever. And that always got me thinking, like, if we actually manifested these things for people, could it give them the exposure that maybe they lacked growing up, where they just grew up in a very, you know, segregated community? I don't know. This is a Tech for Good podcast. I want to talk about tech for bad. So, like, what is like the most evil application of tech that you've seen in your life and your view of things from where you sit?
Most evil application. Oh, you should have prepped me for this one, because now I gotta think.
I sent you the questions like 15 minutes beforehand. I'm sorry. I'm the worst friend. The worst podcast.
What is the most evil application? I guess I use a lot of the social media applications. I probably don't play around with a lot of the more educational tools on our phones or on our apps. But I think the face filters, even in the very beginning, they were an issue, right? Like, you had face filters that sort of had blackface on them, right? And so, again, it's like, if we're trying to, you know, allow someone to feel something or learn from someone else's perspective, that ain't the way to do it.
Right.
And of course, you have these face filters that, I don't remember if it was like Snapchat or one of them, but it was like Cinco de Mayo, and it was just like, you put a mustache and a sombrero on someone, it's like, what are we doing? Like, how many people signed off on this before it went live? Yeah. It's just inappropriate, right? And again, it's riddled in stereotypes. So I think, you know, when you look at Instagram or you look at Facebook, where you have like this, it's not quite open source, but you have anyone who can sort of submit a filter. It's like, what level of, you know, how are we making sure that those checks and balances are happening?
Right.
And there's lots of problems with Facebook, for sure.
You can just say Facebook. That's the correct answer to the question.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Facebook went from, I feel like we were like the early users of Facebook, right? Oh, yeah.
I remember the day I got on in college. Like, I was wearing a gray sweatshirt. I think it was like Aeropostale. Like, my buddy Ben was like, yo, you got to get on this thing. It's like a thing to like rate how hot people are in college. I was like,
it started out. Yeah. Under a terrible intention, right?
Totally.
And then I feel like, and I love when like the TikTok kids are like, oh, you're so old, you're like a millennial, and you're, and like, you know what? We were the first people to be on social media.
We started this shit,
right?
Yeah. Better respect.
Exactly. but what we have now is like something that was just a way to connect with your friends online. to a platform that is like changing the outcomes of elections. Yeah. Like, it's just, it's like, what, like, that is a pure example of, like, you know, we often say this, you know, well, that person didn't mean it that way, or, you know, this is sort of like, they didn't intend for that to happen. Fair. But look, there's so many examples of, like, nonsense that, you know, the Snapchats have, the wrongs that Snapchat and Facebook have done, but haven't really done anything to change it, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It's still the same stuff happening over and over again.
Did you see The Social Dilemma? Did you watch that yet?
I watched it and I was just like, what? Is anyone surprised?
Yeah.
That was really my reaction.
It was really stressful. I was just like real stressed out that these people are just dialing up, you know, like they're dialing up dollars, you know, like they can just, and that's just like that. I didn't realize there was that level of control, and I haven't been on Facebook since 2017, and good riddance, like, but man.
I think the line that stuck with me the most, and I'm paraphrasing, is like, if the product is free, you're the product.
Yeah, right? That's real. Yeah.
Right. So, got me I mean, there. You got to, yeah, you got to pick and choose, you know, how much screen time you want to spend on these things, because at the end of the day, this is not, I mean, they can't be our reality anymore. Yeah. And I think that's the question around, you know, technology for good, or, you know, technology and where it's going wrong, is that the algorithms are incentivizing you to keep scrolling, right? And keep posting. And you've got these behaviors of gratification through likes and retweets or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just completely changing how we show up as human beings. Like, I mean, the stories of people falling off of cliffs just trying to get an Instagram picture, it's just like ridiculous.
Right. Have you heard about this term, the metaverse? Has that come across your radar?
It hasn't come across me yet.
So basically it's like our existence now. It's like the idea that, like, it's like Ready Player One. Like, there's just like this, you know, like virtual existence that we're all kind of in, and all we do is we sit on the computer, we Zoom, we chat, we, you know, have a phone call maybe, and like the reduction in our tactile, you know, world. I think there's actually a movie coming out with like Salma Hayek and Owen Wilson about this or something like that on Amazon. But I think about it all the time, because I think we're creating that, you know, like if you're creating content on the internet, you're creating that metaverse, but it's very fraught. Like, there's lots of problems that you can create if, you know, people are living on there all the time and you're dialing up dollars and it's free and they're the product. So anyway.
Yeah, and I haven't felt more attached to my devices than where we are right now. Mm-hmm. Right? It's the way that we communicate, it's the way that we connect. And so for better or for worse, it's the only way that we can find each other in this moment safely. So it's great to have all of these ways to reach each other in this moment, but, you know, there's never been more, like, I feel like, you know, my mom right now was like, you need to get outside and take a walk and, you know, put that thing down.
Right.
But this is what we do all day, every day, whether you're at work or whether you're, you know, in school, this is the only way that you have to do your work.
So on the flip side of that, like tech for good, if you could dream up a new tech product, what would it be and what problem would it solve and for whom?
Honestly,
what's your killer app?
It's hard to really conceptualize, because I feel like in this moment we're in this place where we're just really trying to get back to normal.
Yeah.
And I don't think normal exists anymore, right? I think we are all collectively going through this grieving process where we are trying to hold on to normal, and it's just not a thing anymore. Like, our new normal is still to be defined. And I think what we are existing in right now, this space of, you know, uncertainty, is probably going to last at least another year if we're being realistic. And so I think, you know, if I were to call out like another product that is doing good, I immediately think of Peloton, right? And that's because it's getting people to move, even if you can't go anywhere.
Right?
It's saying, we're going to bring this piece of equipment into your house, and we're going to help you just get your body moving, right? Doesn't matter what shape, size you are, and it doesn't matter what you like, what type of workout you like. There's literally something for everyone, and there's a trainer for every type of personality.
Yeah.
I always say to everyone, call me if you're interested in buying a Peloton, because I'll convince you to get it, right?
Yeah.
But you're not buying the bike, right? Like, everyone's like, oh, you buy the bike and then you have the subscription. You're not buying the bike. You're buying the community that comes with it, right? That's what you're buying. And so for me, the community is so powerful. And I've met people, even just Afro-Europeans and Black people here in Germany from the platform, because you find someone on the leaderboard, they like high-five you, which is a thing. I won't get into it.
Okay.
They high-five you. Their Instagram handle is the same. You connect, and then you're like, oh, you're like 15 kilometers away.
Wow.
You know, let's take rides together, right? And so I think it creates this community. And I think when we move into the future, you know, it's this connection of community and around a common positive thing that we, you know, as human beings need to experience. I mean, if we can use technology to really create positive habits, positive change in people's lives, and it feels like an easy place to start or to get involved, I think it's just, it's the right next step when we think about what good can look like in terms of technology, and how we as human beings sort of change our behavior. I mean, since I got the bike, I probably only missed a few days.
Yeah.
But I'm on that thing all the time because I get off of it and I feel great, right? Like, I feel good. If that's the only thing I do for myself, I get on that bike or I do that yoga session or that meditation. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, technology organizations or people thinking about the future of tech, it's got to be a way to bring reality and something that's going to, you know, bring people to a better version of themselves.
I mean, I think you're right about, and this is part of the reason we've anchored our agency, Literal Humans, in tech for good, is like, we see what's happening right now, and we're seeing tech for bad. You know, we're seeing, like, you know, what Facebook is doing and people organizing insurrections at the Capitol on Reddit and stuff like that. And not that those platforms are inherently bad, but they're certainly being used as such. But, like, we see the next, you know, tech, whatever it is, 3.0, 4.0, being exactly what you said, tech for good, tech for growth, tech for I want to feel good and build a community. Like, that's the next phase that we see. So, yeah, I think you're, which sort of leads me to my next question of, like, what's your big prediction for tech for good 2021 and beyond? What do you see in the tea leaves there? What do you see happening?
Yeah, I see a lot of, like, I see a lot of, like, educational. So, again, it's like, how are we getting people to sort of change habits, change behaviors, and improve their sense of self? Because I think we're all sort of navigating this, again, world of uncertainty, where sometimes, especially for someone like me, a little bit of a routine feels nice, right? And so how do we, you know, I'm also taking a German course online right now. And so, I mean, I have to pay for it. Of course, it's not free. But it's creating a habit where I do the same thing at the same time every single day, and I'm learning something. And so it's, how do we use technology to elevate us as a people, as a society, but, you know, bring whether it's educational or, like, education or movement or, you know, meditation. There's lots of meditation apps as well that will evolve us to a better sense of ourselves, right? I mean, it's just, it feels like when we move from where we are into where we should be going with technology, it's like making people feel better about themselves. Like, they did something, you know, either good for themselves or good for their community.
Do you think it's going to fall unevenly along lines of class, though? Like, and just to give you an example, I had a client who the other day works in education in the States, and she wrote this op-ed where she talked about, you know, this, like tech utopian vision of education that's, like, you know, basically these rich kids in pods who are, like, talking to other rich kids all over the world and learning all these amazing things and stuff like that. And then, like, all the kids who don't have access to, you know, broadband internet and great devices are just, like, left behind. Like, and that's kind of already happening. Like, you're seeing that in people taking their kids out of schools, public schools, and putting them in learning pods. And that's exactly what's happening. They have great resources. And then, you know, there's kids, like, sat at McDonald's, you know, like, on borrowed laptops trying to get Wi-Fi. Like, how do we make sure it doesn't land unevenly, all these apps that are coming out to make us better people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, I mean, there's two things. It's like the fact that there are people living in New York City right now that don't have access to internet in their homes blows my mind, right? So you send all these students home, you send all the kids home, and they have no access to the internet. It's crazy. And that's why I love New York City libraries, because, you know, you can sit in there for as long as you want and use all the internet. It's great. But I think that to that point, it's like Western societies, right? Like internet should not be as much as your electricity bill. Like it's crazy. Broadband should be relatively free, or as low cost as, you know, water, right? And we can debate on whether water should be free, but that's the point that I'm getting. But I think to your point, you're right. Like it's not, you know, a remote society that has no access to internet. It's in the Western communities that we live in now, where people just don't have access. And so I think if we want to use technology for good, you know, Amazon, largest company in the world, most money in the world, bring broadband to folks, right? To get access to this, or even the amount of access to the internet that people have. There's no shortage of dollars or euros that can go into that sort of philanthropic efforts, you know?
Last question to round us out here. So much about tech for good is about balancing, you know, a life and a career that really, really balances purpose and I would say profit, you know, but like, you know, making your money and doing good. So I'm trying not to ask people for advice anymore, but I'm trying to ask them, like, what's worked well for you in terms of finding a career and a life that balances purpose and profit?
Yeah, I mean, I was having a conversation with a friend probably about a week ago. And we were talking about like what are our intrinsic motivators, like what motivates us, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I'm self-aware in that money motivates me, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. Like you tell me, like, if you do this for 5 days straight, you'll win $50. Like I'm gonna do it even if it's like an annoying thing, because I want that $50 right. that I didn't right. have.
That's a good dinner. That's a good meal. Maybe even exactly. half a good night out, you know?
Exactly.
Depends on what you're into.
And like, and the thing is, like, I don't need the $50, right?
Right.
But then after I sort of peel back the layers to that, there's like, there's levels to how much I'm willing to do something for, you know, that type of motivation. And yeah. So I think it takes someone who's very clear on who they are, where they want to go, what their goals are, what they want to achieve in their lives, and then doing as much as you can to only do that, right? Yeah. And if it makes you great money, great. If it doesn't make you great money, you know, you might have to find another way or another avenue to, you know, do it on the side and then have your day job just so you can, you know, survive the world we've got to live in. Mm-hmm. But I think if you truly know who you are, what you want to do, and what motivates you, stick to that North Star.
Yeah.
But for me, it's like, I want to do great work and I want to do a lot of transformational, impactful work, mm-hmm. but I'm not going to give that up if I have to, there's no role for me that's super, super highly paid, but doesn't align to that purpose,
totally,
right?
Totally.
And so it's a trade-off, because not all the jobs that I've taken pay really, really high salaries, mm-hmm. or the type of lifestyle I wish I could live,
right?
Yeah, yeah. But I do feel like I'm smart enough, if I really wanted to, I could switch into that lifestyle, but I wouldn't be happy, right?
I think yeah. you're right, too, about like having that core, like that central backbone or whatever you want to call it, that's like, here's my vision, here's my purpose, like this is the general direction I want my life to go in. And I think the lockdowns and the pandemic have been really fascinating to kind of watch, like, friends and family and just folks around you, like, struggle with that. Cause like, you got to really sit with yourself with you're in lockdown. And like, you spend a lot of time figuring out who the hell you are, like just sat there and quiet, you know, and like different friends, unfortunately, like, you know, different levels of quality handling that. But, and even myself, I've been seeing that, like, you just feel super down on yourself some days and then you're like, nah, like, I'm not going to take this. Like, I'm going to, you know, get on the Peloton or whatever else, you know? So yeah, super interesting.
I think it's like, being aware of yourself and who you are and what you need in these moments right now, but also being willing to understand that we are all going through these constant up and downs, and that is right now the only thing that's certain.
Yeah, that's a great point to end on. I thank you so much for jumping on. Tech Can't
Happy
Save
to
Us.
Be here.
Yeah, really, really appreciate your time. I know you're busy over there. And yeah, best of luck at International Sports Brand. And I hope everything continues to go well, improves, or you know, you make the right moves, and I'm sure you will. So, and yeah, we'll catch up soon. I'll hit you up. I'll send you a WhatsApp.
Definitely. So, all right, thanks for having me.
All right, thanks so much, Chris. Talk to you later.